Well, once again, the media calls the winning party in an election in Europe far right. The Freedom Party won the vote over the weekend, but opposition is refusing to allow them to form a government because they're far right, they say. We can't work with the far right. This is the will of the people being subverted in a Western country. So joining us from Austria is political analyst Ralf Schollhammer, host of Hammer Time on YouTube. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Natalie. Finally, we talk about Austria, right? Finally, we can actually talk about my country. It's been long, but it's finally happening.
But maybe not in a great way, because tell us what happened. This Freedom Party had a record turnout. They're being called anti-immigrant, of course, far right. But what do they really stand for, and why can they not form the government that the people are voting for them to have?
Well, in order to tell the story, I have to go back 32 years, because my theory is, and I hope that I will not upset your viewers by saying so, I think that modern right-wing populism actually did start in Austria in the early 1990s. Right? The Freedom Party, the rise of the Freedom Party began in the early 1990s, and one of the key elements of their popularity at the time was they made a referendum in 1992. And the name of that referendum was Österreich zuerst, which is German for Austria first. So I'm not saying that Donald Trump stole it with his America first agenda, but the idea that Western governments put everybody else first, except their own people, right? That they act in everybody else's interests, except the interests of their own people. I think this sentiment crystallized into a successful political movement for the first time in the 1990s in Austria. And if we look at what they said in that referendum, I mean, it's quite fascinating, right? They said there is too much migration, which is what we say now. They said there is not enough money for law enforcement and police, which is precisely what we say now. They said that the education system is failing young people, which is exactly what we say now, right? It's us that, you know, that there are this that there is too much obedience to institutions and organizations that are not accountable to the people, which is exactly what we are saying now. So I think in many ways, they were really ahead of their time. They had some up and downs as a party. They were in government before, then they imploded, then they were in government again, then they imploded again. But this is the first time that, and this is so interesting, right? Because it shows you, even if you stumble again and again as a party, if you get the issues right, you can always make a comeback. So they were going up and down, but this time I think they really got everything right. They ran a very disciplined campaign. They got the entire COVID issue right, which I think is ultimately what pushed them over the finishing line. And they got the migration issue right. So I think I'm not hiding my sympathies for the party. I think they did lots of things right. And the Austrians in particular, you can no longer blackmail us into not voting for a party with the far right moniker, because that has been done 30 years ago. It's stale. It's old. Nobody cares about it anymore.
So is it as prevalent in your media as it is in ours? Because we can just call you those names. Okay. And people just are losing trust in the media. That's a familiar story.
Well, let's put it this way. If there is what is a popular term now that I think is not entirely wrong, if there is a so-called uniparty system where, you know, you have maybe one populist opposition party, but all the other parties are more or less the same, that's true in individual countries. But I think when it comes to the media, we have a uni-media system that operates globally. I mean, you cannot distinguish the headlines from Politico in Europe, from the New York Times, from the Austrian daily newspapers, from most of the British newspapers. It's the same article all over. Sometimes it is like they have a prefabricated article, and then they just switch the names. It is far right, and then the name of an Austrian politician, or Donald Trump, or Giorgia Meloni, and then it's exactly the same article. Because there is no longer an actual engagement with the positions. It is just, these people are far right, therefore, I don't even have to talk about the positions they stand for. We saw the same in Germany with the AfD, right? The AfD is far right, therefore they are bad, therefore it doesn't even matter what they demand on the policy side, which, again, the voters are much smarter than that. What I really like about these developments is they show that the people are so much smarter than the media and those in power often think. And I find this very, very encouraging.
Okay, but the center, what they're calling the center left, or this, well, let's ditch these labels. The Social Democrats and the People's Party are refusing to work with them and allow them to form a government. So what power will they have if they are not allowed to form a government, which the people have voted for?
Well, that's a good question. And the problem is, yes, right, this time probably they will not make it into government. That is correct. But I think whichever alternative government is being formed will not have a very long shelf life. So to be quite honest, this might be a good thing because they are usually very good as an opposition party. They came in first with about almost 3 percentage points ahead of the Conservative Party. If they have to go in opposition again, I would argue that the next time they will not have 29%, they will have 34%. And then they can govern even more effectively. So if the other parties, because this is the big irony here, I don't know what the expectation of the other parties is. People voted for the Freedom Party because they're dissatisfied with the performance of the other parties. Now, the other parties, they don't offer a program. They only offer, we are not the Freedom Party. We are not the FPÖ. But that's not enough, right? This is not going to convince anybody. By the way, this is the same. The reason why we know that this is not working, we see this in Germany, right? If all you have is, we are not the AfD, that's not weakening the AfD, it's strengthening the AfD, because contrary to the media and the politicians, people actually look or listen to the program. And just as with the AfD in Germany, or with Nigel Farage in the UK, or the Freedom Party in Austria, they look at the program or the parts of the program that they promised that they will execute and say, we like what we see. So they want to see that executed. And if those in power are not doing it, well, then more and more voters will switch to that party.
So they're voting, though, for better living conditions for Austrians. I think most people may not realize Austrians have some of the highest tax rates in the Western world. So what specifically do you think people are going to? Is it very much like what we're going to vote for in November? We want safe borders. We want law enforcement. We want good infrastructure. When you land in America, you might notice that there's a big sign that says Joe Biden gave you this new water fountain in the Philadelphia airport. And then what else, right? And you're like, great, that's what I got out of this infrastructure bill. So what specifically do you think Austrians want that we may relate to in the United States?
Well, what's really interesting is I looked at the demographics of the people who voted for the Freedom Party. They are almost exactly the same demographics like the people who vote for the AfD in Germany. And what are those demographics? It's people under the age of 30. So it's those who have the most of their life still ahead of them. So for them, life is not in the rear mirror. Life for them is through the front window. So they have to live with the consequences of failed policies for the longest. It's the working class, right? It's people in a job, in working class jobs. It's people who are self-employed. So it's those who are the future of the country and those who keep the country going. Now, who voted for the quote-unquote establishment parties? It's mostly people over 60. It's the pensioners. It's the people, and no disrespect to the pensioners. They did their share, don't get me wrong. But it's mostly people who are shielded from the failed policies of the past. They have their fixed pension, they have their income, which, just like in the United States with Social Security, nobody's gonna touch it until the system collapses, of course, but nobody believes, even though it will, that the collapse is imminent. And it's people that, let's be frank here, they are on a clock in a way. And again, I mean no disrespect, but for them, the mass migration issue, for example, or what's happening in schools, unless, of course, they have grandchildren and so, but we have the same horrible demographic profile like everybody else in Europe. So for them, it doesn't really, if you're 60, 75, and you live in a nice apartment in a nice district of Vienna, it doesn't really matter to you whether the schools are crumbling in working class districts. But what it shows you is that the future is right wing, because it's those who are young, it's those who are working, it's those who are paying taxes, who shift more and more to the right. And that's, as I said, that's happening in Germany, it's happening in Austria. And I believe, to be honest, I think it's also happening if we believe certain polls among union members, for example. I think it's also happening in the United States. I think this is the problem with, if you allow me to switch gears real quickly, problem with Donald Trump has been that Donald Trump, I think, pursued very good policies, but he was very bad in articulating them. What we saw yesterday with J.D. Vance was, this is what Trump's policies look like if somebody talks about them in an eloquent, articulated way. And actually, they very much resemble the program and the ideas of the quote-unquote far-right parties in Europe, right? Protect the borders, create conditions where young people have a future, where they can afford a family, where they can afford housing, and where, you know, where those who want to see a future for themselves and for the country have the conditions that they can fulfill the highest potential. So there is this is not just an Austrian phenomenon. I think this is a phenomenon across the West. The Europeans, I think, had one advantage that, and this is just coincidence. This is not trying to be a cheap shot at the Americans, because no, I love the Americans. I love America, but that the United States, their right wing, or their, I just use the term far right because everybody uses it, but I don't mean it in a negative sense. It found an imperfect vessel in Donald Trump. And of course, Donald Trump also had the hardest fight, because in Europe, you just get new parties, the AfD, right? Nigel Farage, you get just new parties because our systems allow it. In the United States, founding a new party is a suicidal attempt. So Donald Trump had to take over an established party and reshape it into this populist, right-wing, working-class party. But I think he has accomplished it. Now he needs somebody who can articulate it. And that makes the J.D. Vance Trump tickets, or the Trump-Vance tickets, so interesting. I have to admit, after yesterday's debate, my dream would be kind of a right-wing coalition from Italy to Austria to Germany to Hungary to France to the UK, including the United States. I think this could really be a Western civilization-saving coalition. So I plead with your viewers, your American viewers, that go and early vote and go on November 5th, and every vote, even if you live in California, every vote counts.
Yes. Yeah, I guess what I worry about is that we saw in 2016 there was a vote for Brexit, and that same sentiment ended up in a Trump win in 2016. So we saw this sort of wave of a similar sentiment, and we had a template in the United States. We were sort of warned when Brexit passed. And so now we see a similar thing. We see a lot of right, I don't want to use wing anymore. I'm going to say right-leaning voters sweeping throughout Europe. We think that will happen in the United States, but we're being given a template in Europe for the leftist party to say, I don't accept this. I don't allow you to govern. I'm not, we dig our heels in, we're going to just throw a big fat temper tantrum. And yes. So is this the temper tantrum that we may see after a Trump win? Is that something that you see is a possibility?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Brexit is a beautiful example. So you had David Cameron came in. I was almost calling him James Cameron, but of course it's David. David Cameron came in. Like, they did the referendum, and to everybody's surprise, the British people voted to leave the EU. But the issue then was that the people that were supposed to make Brexit happen were people who didn't want Brexit to happen, and this is exactly how Brexit was executed. Because this is where we can, whether you want to call it the entrenched institutions, whether you want to call it the deep state, but this is the big problem. Very often, and I said this on your show before, right? The problem is, even if the right wins elections, winning an election gets you into office, but it is controlling the institutions that gets you into power. And this, I think, was also what hampered Donald Trump in his first term, that Trump was always not just fighting against the Democrats. He was always also fighting against the institutions, in a sense that, for example, a good one is, let's say, the State Department. They basically wanted to do whatever they wanted without any reference to the president. And he also had to fight the Paul Ryans and the Mitch McConnells, both of whom didn't like Trump because they were, old guard institutional country club Republicans. They were, and to this, I think Mitch McConnell, if he doesn't freeze up in front of a camera, was capable of adapting to this a little bit. But I think people like Paul Ryan, to the very end, did not understand that the Republican Party, if they want to survive, as they did under Trump, is the party of a multi-ethnic, working class, patriot coalition, just as it is for the right in Europe. But the problem is, and this was the mistake by everybody on the right to some extent, that we neglected the institutions, from the bureaucracy to the universities, and it's the universities where the people are educated that then move into the bureaucracy. If all of these people are left-wing, it's great to have a right-wing chancellor, a right-wing president, but to say it in a somewhat provocative way, he has a hard time getting someone, you know, carrying a letter from his office to the post box. And I think this is also, of course, remember with Donald Trump, there were all these leaks and all these stories. And it was very difficult for him to govern because you had all these people that actively tried to sabotage his presidency, even though they were in no position to do so. So in many cases, I mean, I know this conversation is not supposed to be about the United States, but there were many cases where, you know, the executive branch of which the president is the head was not taken as serious as it was supposed to be, because the institution, I mean, there was this great op-ed by an anonymous source in the New York Times about how great the deep state was in resisting Donald Trump, where you say, you guys are bureaucrats, you're civil servants. You're not supposed to be the resistance. You do whatever the president tells you because that is your job. And we see it now also with all these, the Windmans and all these people who I honestly sometimes feel have more allegiance to Ukraine than to the United States. Nothing bad against Ukraine, but if you are an American politician, I think your first priority should be the United States. And that's exactly this kind of deep state attitude that justifiably so many people are bothered with.
Right. All right. Well, we'll see if this is a template. We have less than a month before our election, so we'll watch it. But thank you for explaining what's going on in Austria and what the will of the people is and how it's kind of okay to care what people of Austria think. That's gotta be a thing. So you can follow Ralph. His channel is, your show is called Hammer Time on YouTube. And you can find him also on X at, which one do you want? Raphael? Is this one the one you're using for the?
Okay. Yes, I know that. I have to change the name. The name is a funny story I'll tell one day, but I have to change it to make it easier.
Right.
To say.
Yeah, it's like Schwarzenegger. You gotta meet us where we are. Things that we can spell.
Precisely.
All right. It's always a pleasure to see you, Ralph. Thank you for joining us on Redacted again.
Thanks for having me, Natalie. Thank you.